Dissonance Media and the Other Stories presents. Step into the abyss of After the Gloaming, a gothic fiction podcast that delves into the depths of human emotion. Unyielding love, revenge, internal struggles, and restless souls await you in 9 haunting episodes, where dread, fear, and rare glimpses of eerie happiness linger. Dare to listen on your favorite podcatcher? After the Gloaming beckons. Search now, but beware. Innocence will be left behind.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
These aren't the stories your mother told you. No, these are the other stories.
If you're finding yourself going a little crazy in your household, then why not go a little crazy with some friends over in the Hawk and Cleaver Facebook Movie Club? Last Saturday, we all watched the movie Tremors together, and we're planning on watching more movies together in the coming weeks, including this coming Saturday. If you're interested, then go to facebook.com/groups/ Hawk and Cleaver and keep Saturday clear on your calendar. Today's episode is Nocturne in Spirit, written by Kezia Kinniston Mitchell and narrated by Erica Ventura.
It was midnight on a Tuesday, and the attic bloomed with music. Notes piled on each other in glittering spirals as Delma's fingers danced over the violin's neck. The swell of a major scale melted into the oblique sadness of a minor. Then a melody broke out between them, and she slid from practice drills into the lilting rhythm of a favorite sonata. The room was lit by a single lamp on the table, angled toward the music stand, though Delma rarely consulted the pages. She didn't see as well as she once had, though she would have never admitted it. Her reading glasses lay on the table, ignored. In the corner, an old record player crackled as it spun a well-worn orchestral album at full volume. It was a familiar selection of pieces. Back in the day, the critics had called them some of Delma's finest work with a philharmonic, and she had forgotten nothing. She played along with the album, chasing every peak and valley of the music with ease, her eyes closed and her body swaying in tempo. The violin's taut, oak-toned voice struck out into the shadows, pushing back the darkness and seeping into the peeling wallpaper, each phrase bolder and louder, as if in defiance of the night. Delma had always lived alone, and felt no need to be troubled by consideration for her neighbors. Besides, the rest of the brownstone, sprawling, indecently decayed, like a bad tooth spoiling the city's smile, was empty, and had been for years. One by one, the other apartment's residents had left, pushed out by developers, or just too old and sick to stay. Only Delma remained. Here, in the very top of the building, in her faded, dated nest, its window staring out across a world that hummed with life, and yet was as distant as the moon. She had no family. There was a cousin in Nebraska somewhere, perhaps, but they didn't speak. Nobody spoke much to Delma. They hadn't for a long time. That didn't matter, though. She didn't need the burdens of pleasantries and small talk. They were pointless wastes, as she used to tell Lillian. Delma was not a people person. She would always cringe through the vapid conversations at every after-party, every function and fundraiser she had to attend for the orchestra, hating the smile glued to her face and squirming inside at the awkward burn of other people's flat jokes. Lillian would laugh and call Delma stuffy, egotistical, and they would come home in a cab across the river, bickering gently all the way. They would make love on the worn couch by the fireplace, or in Delma's wide bed, between the stacks of records and the boxes of old sheet music. After, Lillian would always leave, slipping out into the darkness and back to her real life, or so she would say, with a broad, red-lipped smile cutting across her face like a wound. Delma drew back her bow with renewed force, a blurred and sour note marring an otherwise perfect passage. She cursed under her breath and pushed on, caught up in the music's sweeping rise. Her hands ached and her neck was stiff, though the violin was a comforting weight wedged between her chin and shoulder, its wood as warm as skin. None of it seemed so very long ago. Not when she played like this. When she lost herself in the music, it was all real again. The audiences, the warmth of the lights and applause, the sound of the string section warming up, their bows creaking across the necks of violins and cellos. Delma could almost smell the clashing fragrances of perfumes and colognes, flowers and buttonholes, hairspray and wood polish. She could catch the glint of movement that marked the conductor's baton and feel the thrill of being caught up in the tide of a perfection bigger than herself, where her joys, her failings, no longer belonged to her alone. It was this way every evening. Delma played her nightly medley, not giving a damn how loud the music was or how carried away she grew in the soaring tumult of notes, and never noticing the tears on her cheeks until they pooled at her chin, wetting the place where she and her violin met. She finished with the record player, ripping her bow from the strings in a final flourish at the close of the last piece on the album, a live performance she remembered well, captured for eternity in the LP's neatly pressed grooves. Delma, her eyes squeezed shut, relived the night even as it faded, the thunderous 30-year-old cheers falling away into the record player's equally outdated hiss and pop. The last echoes of the notes reverberated through the stillness of her lonely apartment. Delma let out her breath in a great rush, and then, to her confusion, found that the silence was incomplete. There was applause. She could hear it still, but it wasn't some trick of memory. It was real, unmistakable sound of someone in the room with her clapping, palm to palm, skin to skin. Delma spun around, her violin clutched defensively to her chest. The apartment was empty. Everything was as she left it. The table with its dim lamp and scattering of books, magazines, and mail order catalogs she read but never bought from. The dusty shelf that held house plants and unanswered letters. The worn couch that was bowed with a million memories. Beyond the picture window on the far wall, the city's lights were countless dots of yellow and white, the taillights of cars on the avenues like raindrops seen through the glass, and every bit as inconsequential. In here, time stood still. It was another world, and it belonged to her alone. Delma let out a breath and shook her head. "You're becoming a foolish old woman," she muttered, chastising herself, though she wasn't accustomed to acknowledging her age. Delma wiped down her violin and laid it tenderly in its case. She looked down at her hands, at the skin stretched thinner over her knuckles, the subtle lines and ridges that had somehow formed before she'd noticed. "You're old," she thought. "Old and alone. The way she'd said you'd be. So far away from everyone that you don't even know how to go back." Delma blinked. For a moment, the voice she gave to her thoughts had not sounded quite like her own. But that was nonsense. It was late, and she should go to bed. This was just tiredness, nothing more. She moved through her nighttime routine on the autopilot, made cocoa, washed her face, slipped into a clean cotton nightshirt, all with the echo of the orchestra in her head. Her bedroom was not large, and was made smaller by the fact it was filled with boxes and knickknacks. Pictures on the wall showed performances, award ceremonies, dozens of tiny evidences of a life lived through one consuming passion. Music had given Delma everything, from opportunities for travel, Tel Aviv, Barcelona, Vienna. Oh, hadn't those been the days? To a purpose she'd never found elsewhere. Having lost it all never seemed more cutting than when she lay awake at night, watching the darkness twist her pictures into strange, ugly versions of themselves, with shadows painted across their frames. Delma turned off her bedside lamp, leaving the room shrouded in the blue-gray of polluted moonlight. She was tired, a bone-deep kind of tired, that she had no wish to think about. All she wanted was to sleep. And yet there, right on the edge of hearing, was something that made her breath catch. A few short notes, a piece of melody she'd played tonight, a nocturne she'd loved, and which had once been called her greatest triumph. A voice was humming it. The sound thin and pitched just a little too high. Delma's fingers curled on the edge of the comforter. Outside, city lights pricked the darkness and the traffic was a distant, steady thrum, but that world wasn't hers. It was so far away. There were thousands of lives out there, people behind every window and every street, but they seemed unreal, remote, nothing but dreams. Her breath came high and tight in her chest, and she sought out shadows in the corners of the room. Nighttime made everything familiar seem odd, but nothing was out of place. Then there was that melody again, that voice. It was coming closer. Delma squeezed her eyes shut. "Only a trick of the mind," she told herself. A memory, something stirred up by the music she played. Nothing more. Still, Delma did not open her eyes. Her pulse pounded in her forehead and her breath felt rough, like cold air on the first frost, and sweat beaded on her skin. The melody was strong but simple, part of a nocturne that conjured images of sweet summer evenings and soft dusks deepening to warm nights. It was the kind of tune you never forgot. An indelible memory, like a first kiss or a broken heart. Delma opened her eyes, and those cold breaths withered in her throat. Lillian stood in the doorway, as beautiful as ever, silver blue in the moonlight. Her white dress was slit from ankle to thigh. Her bare arms and long legs, those of a dancer's, hard and graceful. Her black hair fell down her back in an uneven curtain. Her head held, crooked, on her ravaged, bent neck. And her mouth was a wide, wide slash of red. She moved forward, and Delma shrank back against the pillows. Lillian's slender fingers, tipped with broken, grave-stained nails, curled on the doorframe and tapped out a familiar rhythm. She smiled, her lips stretching around dark, rotten gums studded with yellow teeth. The seeds at the center of some obscene, bloody fruit. You always did play so perfectly, so full of passion. The words burned themselves into Delma's skull, though the apparition gave no sign of speaking. She just watched, smiling, her milk-clouded, sightless eyes fixed on Delma. Passion meant everything with you, didn't it? The melody came again, a light and reedy tune that passed over Lillian's rotten tongue like a dry breeze. Delma would have spoken, but there were no words, nothing to say. Nothing she could have said past the roar of the music that seemed to bleed from the walls of her room, pressing in on her until it crushed the breath from her lungs and forced streams of hot tears from her eyes. I'm still in the river, Delma. Down in silt with the rusted wrecks. Delma whimpered, too afraid to confront the creature, yet too frightened to hide her face. There was no sense in running, after all. This wasn't something she could ever escape. Lillian drew closer to the bed and knelt on the edge. She folded her broken body down against the covers in a movement that was a cruel parody of sensual. And the smell of death washed over Delma. It had been a mistake. That was all. A moment of weakness, of humiliated rage and passion curdled into hate. Lillian's damn smile, her lips painted in devil-may-care red, so beautiful, but saying such ugly, callous things. Delma stared blindly into the dark, her breathing ragged as a bony, brittle form pressed against her. I'm sorry, she whispered, stumbling on the unfamiliar words. It was an accident. I didn't. Can't you see? I'm sorry. A fetid laugh, a breath like spoiled meat and ash grazed Delma's cheek. Sorry's a word. A word people like you love to say. I'm still where you left me, Delma. I'm still down there, waiting. After you did what you did, all those years ago. But so are you, my love. So are you. And you'll never be free. A scream broke from Delma's lips, stifled by a pitted, leathery hand. Lillian lay close, her head resting between Delma's chin and shoulder, her bloody mouth and broken neck a testament to the night that had destroyed everything, and to the secret that weighted Delma's life down like an anchor, or like the cement blocks on a well-wrapped corpse. The past is the remotest place of all. The one with no path back. No matter how many regrets you have to pave it.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of The Other Stories. Nocturne in Spirit was written by Kezia Kinniston Mitchell, narrated by Eric Ventura, edited by Carl Hughes, and muted by Costa T and Tom Robson, with added ghostly huns provided by Kaylee Smith. The episode illustration was provided by Luke Spooner of Carry On House. Kezia Kinniston Mitchell is a speculative fiction and horror author, approximately 40% caffeine by volume. You can connect on Twitter with her at Kezia Kinniston, or check out keziakinnistonmitchell.com for free short reads and upcoming releases. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can help support the show over at patreon.com/hookandcleaver. You can join our book club and chat about the podcast over at facebook.com/groups/hookandcleaver. The Other Stories is a production by the story studio Hawk and Cleaver, and it's brought to you by Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, which means don't change it, don't sell it, but by all means, share the hell out of it. Until next time.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.